When he was a kid, politics shaped Jay Flanders' life. His dad was state treasurer, so after school was spent running around the halls of the state house. As an adult, Jay Flanders is a guy who actually shapes politics. He's not the guy that likes to be out front. He prefers to do his business back in the proverbial smoke-filled room.
First of all, there's no smoking in the state house, so there's no smoke-filled rooms. Not anymore.
Flanders was Senate Chief of Staff for the Republican majority. He's consulted on campaigns, and he's agreed to meet me at this coffee shop in Concord to talk about a part of politics that chances are doesn't come up at your dinner table. The intricate, obscure process of political redistricting. Or the story of how Republicans gerrymandered New Hampshire's Senate map. It's okay. We can say it. Gerrymandering. Flanders says it.
Gerrymandering may be distasteful. In the more extreme cases, it is hardcore bare-knuckle politics, but everyone agreed the map was going to change.
So let's set the scene. 2010, Tea Party outrage helps Republicans sweep the New Hampshire State House, one of the starkest political flips any state makes. Republicans come out of that with the biggest state house majority they've had in a generation.
A new era of government in Concord as new members of the House and Senate were sworn into office.
That was also the year of the census, when a state gets new numbers about who and how many people it has and redraws its political map to reflect those shifts. And in New Hampshire, it's the party in power that holds the pen. Translation, a big political opportunity for the new Republican majority. They got to draw fresh maps for the House, the Senate, and the Executive Council. The Senate map was Flanders' job.
Republican senators wanted a map that would continue to elect Republican senators.
And this is not a moment that attracts protests on the State House lawn, but this may be the most important thing Republicans get to do that term, drawing the political map that'll be in play for the next decade. So Flanders and his team get to work, following the few rules the state constitution lays out. Cut the state into 24 pieces, one district for every Senate seat, each with roughly the same amount of people in it, and don't break up the towns.
We blew up a map of the state of New Hampshire to, I think it was like 3 by 5 feet, and it had the population of each town printed on it.
Flanders says it wasn't simple getting to a map that met the wants and needs of 24 elected senators, plus other members of the Republican Party, outside operatives. You had to factor in some horse trading.
Somebody saying, I need this town, and the other guy saying, I need this town, and fighting over it. And if they did, they had to figure out how to work that out behind the scenes.
But the Republicans got their map and enough votes to pass it.
It was signed into law, and we had an election, and everybody went on with their life.
And that next election in 2012, even though Democratic Senate candidates actually won more votes, Republicans held on to their majority. In other words, the people of New Hampshire leaned one way, but the Senate went the other. So how did that happen? That's gerrymandering. Republicans drew a map to give their party the advantage, and they did it following the rules. Because here's the thing with gerrymandering. Even though the U.S. Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional and nearly every state has gone to court over it, turns out it's really hard to prove.
And that's a really urgent problem for our democracy.
Nick Stephanopoulos might have come up with a solution. He's a lawyer on a lot of gerrymandering cases and a redistricting expert at University of Chicago. He's got this formula to boil partisan gerrymandering down to one number.
We have a single number that tells us how severe is the gerrymander and who's benefited and who's hurt by it.
Stephanopoulos' formula relies on something he calls wasted votes, votes that had no impact on the outcome of an election. New Hampshire Public Radio took his formula and applied it to over 30 years of state Senate elections. And what we found was that in most elections since at least the mid-90s, Republicans have been gaining far more than their fair share of representation. Which Stephanopoulos says means the voices of voters are getting more and more muffled.
And this means that there's a weaker connection than ever before in modern U.S. history between what voters want and then what voters are actually getting.
Again, this is what gerrymandering does. It sets up this alternate political reality. Take New Hampshire. We've gone from being solidly Republican to a true swing state. But the last few rounds of political maps pretty much ignore that. You see fewer and fewer swing districts. One of those last surviving purple patches is Senate District 12. Republicans and Democrats have traded wins there for the last four elections. But over that time, it's undergone some major surgery.
If you look at how it was redistricted, District 12 was redistricted to have a definite Republican advantage.
Democrat Peg Gilmore held the District 12 Senate seat twice, once before and once after the new map. The district used to be a big chunk of the city of Nashua, which leans Democrat, plus a few neighboring Republican-leaning towns. But after 2010, it was redrawn as this suburban, stretched-out district, taking out most of Nashua and attaching the town of Ringe way over in another county.
You can't get there from here.
Gilmore didn't like what the Republicans made out of the political map, but she says, given the chance, her party would do the same thing.
Doesn't matter. If it had been Democrats and they had done the same thing, it would be just as onerous. We really need, in my opinion, to take the redistricting out of the political process, out of the party process.
Gilmore's not the only one suggesting this solution. Hand over the job of drawing the new political map to an independent group of people who don't have any interest in getting elected. Six other states do it this way. More are considering it. A few months ago, I met attorney Paul Toomey in the halls of the Legislative Office Building. He'd just testified about why New Hampshire should set up an independent commission like that and was feeling pretty hopeful.
I do. I wouldn't bet my actual farm on it. I wouldn't bet any of my children on it.
Toomey was Democratic legal counsel in the State House, but he's been working pro bono on reforming redistricting for over a decade, trying to convince legislators that this is an issue both parties should be worried about.
I think everybody in there understands that people are disenchanted with what their government's doing, and this is one of the problems, that we have election results that don't follow the votes. The majority of the people will vote for one party and the other party has control of everything. That really isn't a democracy.
But the bill Toomey was pushing for that day, it didn't go anywhere. Because here's maybe the trickiest part of changing redistricting. When other states managed to get it out of the hands of politicians, voters and courts led the way. But here in New Hampshire, our system is set up so that it's the legislators, the ones who most stand to gain from gerrymandering, who have to make that change. They have to willingly give up power, which is hard to expect, even with the next round of redistricting still more than 4 years away. Who knows who'll be drawing that map? For New Hampshire Public Radio and State of Democracy, I'm Natasha Haverty.
Halfway between two census cycles, states are in the middle of a dry season when it comes to redrawing political districts. In New Hampshire, like in most states, it's a process controlled by the legislature. And so whichever party is in power gets to determine the lines. Critics say that this leads to gerrymandering, giving an unfair advantage to that party come election day, while others say these fears are way overblown. Now, a handful of states are currently looking at whether to adjust the redistricting process. In New Hampshire this year, a bill to establish an independent commission to draw the lines was proposed, but voted down. Today in the Exchange, rethinking redistricting, including new analysis from the NHPR State of Democracy team of 30 years of state Senate maps and data. Let's hear from you this hour. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Dan Barrick, Senior Policy and Politics Editor at NHPR. We'll be talking about Dan's State of Democracy
Quick.
Team analysis.
Who's running for State Senate in your neck of the woods this year? Nothing coming to you?
You know, here's what it is. You're right. People, if you ask them who the candidates are for state Senate in their district, in any district in the state, they'd be hard-pressed to list them.
Nancy Steenson of Danville knows she's probably one of those names you can't name. She's a Republican running for the District 23 state Senate seat. It's just one of a handful of competitive races across the state that could determine control of that chamber. Look back over just the last few legislative sessions, and you quickly see why this statewide tug-of-war is so important this year. It's the Senate where New Hampshire's most far-reaching policy decisions, and the ones most likely to affect your daily life, have been made in recent years. the state budget, Medicaid expansion, cuts to business taxes. In each case, the Senate's version was largely the one that carried the day.
I think that's always been the case. And
Curtis Barry, a lobbyist in Concord for two decades, says the state Senate, rather than the 400-member House, has often been the place for good old-fashioned deal-making in the statehouse.
Right. Well, because there are fewer of them, each one individually is much more important. The vote of each one of them is far more important. It necessitates more compromise, more reaching across the aisle.
Compromise? Reaching across the aisle? That's not the tone of this campaign season, at least not at the national level. So here's the question facing state Senate candidates. How do you get voters to see that these down-ballot races matter? Rich Killian, a consultant who's advising the GOP's Senate Political Committee, has a simple message for his party's candidates this year. Keep it close to home.
There seems to be an unease on both parties, a lack of universal support for the top of the ticket, which kind of lends to what always works in New Hampshire anyway, which is local candidates should run local races.
Killian says by limiting their pitches to bread and butter issues, taxes, spending, public schools, candidates can pierce through the noise of the national debate.
I think that's a great thing for the candidates because they can focus in their own district, whether it's Exeter or whether it's Enfield, and they can focus on those voters locally.
And it's costing more to get those voters to pay attention. Since 2004, Senate candidate spending has jumped by more than 50%. In the last election, several candidates spent more than $250,000 on their races. That's not counting money spent by outside special interest groups or cash spent by the political parties, which have raised more than $500,000 so far this year.
You know, we really focus on running professional campaigns.
Gene Martin of the New Hampshire Democratic Party says serious candidates nowadays need a more polished and costlier approach to win.
And for a long time, the state Senate, I think, was a pretty easy thing. You would, you know, maybe raise $30,000. You know, now our candidates are raising $100,000 to $200,000 and running really competitive, sophisticated races.
Targeted phone banks and advertising efforts, signs, brochures, campaign websites. As candidate Nancy Steenson has found, it adds up.
Literature costs money to print. Signs cost money to order. Mailings cost money. These kinds of things just cost a lot of money. And the more you raise, the more you can spend.
Sitting in his basement office across from the State House, Senator Dan Feltus of Concord has it easy this campaign season. He's running uncontested for re-election. Feltus is a Democrat, so you might be surprised to hear him say he's sad to say goodbye to some of his retiring Republican colleagues. But listen to his list of the biggest accomplishments of the past legislative session.
Medicaid expansion, the heroin and opioid public health crisis, affordable housing, energy policy.
And it might make sense. In each case, the deals on those issues were bipartisan affairs, Republicans and Democrats teaming up. Feltus says with this year's GOP retirees, the Senate is losing some of its cross-aisle dealmakers.
My concern is some of the folks that are leaving, retiring, some of the Republicans, were people that would work deals out, would be willing and open to compromise if you make a good argument, if you have good policy ideas, willing to iron out the wrinkles. You know.
Those departing Republicans, like Nancy Stiles of the Seacoast and David Booten of Hooksett, have left busy races to replace them, and they might end up being among the tightest Senate races this fall. Presidential years tend to be good ones for Democrats in New Hampshire, with more voters coming out to the polls. So the party has its eyes on those battleground Senate districts. Still, ask the candidates themselves, and they'll tell you, it's not easy to predict how the winds will blow in November, especially with the unpredictable race at the top of the ballot.
That's a million-dollar question. Nobody knows what to expect.
Maureen Barrows of Exeter is another Republican running for the District 23 seat.
I mean, I watch CNN. I watch a few other channels, and I'm as confused as anyone out there. I'm focusing on what I can do or what I hope I can do and what others already in Concord or hope to be elected can do.
Voters will get their first crack at these state Senate candidates on primary day, September 13th. For NHPR News, I'm Dan Barrick.
I sat on the stairwell in the Hampton Town office building with Democrat Tom Sherman last Thursday evening. He and opponent Republican Dan Innes had just done their first forum for all the people at home watching their local public access channel. And Sherman seemed a little disheartened. He felt like there'd been no time to get into the nitty-gritty.
The problem is that you are very limited in getting your message across. You can't really rebut what the other person has said. And it's really hard to convey complexity.
And conveying complexity, that's what it might take to win voters here in State Senate District 24. Because this one really could go either way. In the last few election cycles, District 24 went Democrat for governor, Republican for U.S. Senate, and back and forth for Congress. It's one of the only state Senate districts left where that kind of ballot splitting is actually the norm. Both candidates say that's why they're best suited to represent it. They're not confined by their parties. Here's Republican Dan Innes.
Party line always sort of bothers me. I think we all have to make decisions based on our value system and the values of our district and its constituents, because ultimately we're there to serve them, not to serve the party, not to serve ourselves, but to serve our constituents.
But this is also the first election since the new District 24 was drawn that the seat is open. The person who's held it for the past three terms, Nancy Stiles, is stepping down. She was a moderate, and her successor will need to be too. Innes and Sherman do share some viewpoints. Both support a woman's right to choose. Both have big problems with right-to-work legislation. But maybe the best measure of what kind of senator either of them will be is how they think through a policy question. So let's just take one case study, the death penalty. And that's actually a good one to look at, because the last two efforts to repeal New Hampshire's capital punishment law failed by a single vote in the Senate. This next session, the deciding vote could be one of these guys.
Oh, that's something that we're going to have a long, heart-wrenching and soul-searching discussion about.
So how do these two candidates think through big, hairy policy questions? How do they navigate moral issues like the death penalty? Tom Sherman says he views them through the eyes of a doctor. That's his day job. But Sherman's also the first to admit he struggles with being morally consistent on this one.
I mean, on almost every level, I have to oppose the death penalty. I think the most difficult issue comes in, just to be blunt, is we have one person sitting on death row in the state.
Sherman's talking about Michael Addison, who was convicted of killing a police officer 10 years ago.
The cost to fully litigate all of the appeals processes, and then we have to build a way to kill him. We as a state have to allocate funds to execute one person. I think at the very least we should say no more except this one. And I could live with that, because I don't think the world is a perfect place. And I think we have to do the best we can.
Dan Innes has also thought through this question. Usually he frames policy questions from the financial side. He's a successful businessman. He was dean of the UNH Business School, but not this one.
You know, I've had a lot of conversations with people about this. And my position on the death penalty is that I support it. I think it should be used rarely and in exceptional cases.
But if it's
if it's either or, I'll vote to keep the death penalty.
Even when they show you the numbers about how much it's going to cost?
Yes. Yes. Some things are a matter of principle, not just a matter of dollars and cents. And again, you know, there are some crimes so heinous, and we've seen them.
But in a noisy election season like this one, these guys won't get a lot of room for nuance like this. Back on that stairwell the other night, Tom Sherman offered up one solution.
Well, you know, if all things were equal, I'd like to share the seat with Dan. And I could see that. Dan has strengths and I have strengths. And so what does that mean for, you know, what's best for the state? Well, that's what the voters have to decide.
And sadly, voters can only pick one of these guys to sit in the seat. For NHPR News, I'm Natasha Haverty.
This is All Things Considered on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Peter Biello. There are a lot of things that can impact the outcome of state elections, policy debates, the dynamics at the national level, and of course, the candidates themselves all play an important role. But there's another part of the equation that doesn't always get as much attention, the shape of the districts in which those elections take place. NHPR's Casey McDermott recently took a closer look at how redistricting might have impacted one race, the New Hampshire State Senate, and she joins us now to share what she's found. Good afternoon, Casey.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Let's start with the baseline. What is redistricting and why does it matter?
So redistricting is basically another way of saying drawing lines on the political map. And at a federal level, that means figuring out the boundaries of congressional districts. And at the state level, it affects the boundaries for the House of Representatives, the state Senate, and the Executive Council. Redistricting usually happens every 10 years following the release of new census data. And it's important to keep in mind that in New Hampshire, the party in power is the one that gets to hold the pen. So as you might imagine, that party, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, has an inherent self-interest to draw those districts in a way that might benefit them in future election cycles. And redistricting isn't necessarily the sexiest issue politically. It involves a lot of maps, meetings, and work behind the scenes. But depending on how those district lines end up being drawn, it can have a pretty big influence, especially if some districts are drawn deliberately to favor one party, because that in turn gives that party an extra boost in terms of how many seats they might pick up in a given branch of government.
You looked at redistricting in the state Senate specifically. Why?
So this isn't the first time New Hampshire Public Radio has taken a look at redistricting. Some of my colleagues did an in-depth analysis of the issue earlier this year on the state Senate races, and this is just kind of picking up where they left off. It's also a little bit more manageable to look at the state Senate than the House of Representatives. You only have 24 seats up for grabs as opposed to 400. And the Republicans held the majority in the state Senate for the last 2 years. Heading into November, though, the Democrats talked a pretty big game when it came to their hopes for regaining a majority there. In the end, this year's election still gave us a 14-10 Republican majority. And after the election, Democrats are now kind of blaming their losses, at least in part, on redistricting.
And is that a fair excuse?
So redistricting definitely isn't the only reason Democrats lost this year. But based on a measurement that's been used in high-profile redistricting cases around the country, it is fair to say that the Republicans had a little bit of a leg up this year. The metric that we use to analyze the state Senate districts is something called the efficiency gap. And it was developed as a way to measure just how much redistricting benefits one party over another compared to the outcome of the overall popular vote. If you look at all of those votes that were cast for Republican and Democratic state Senate candidates in all of the districts this year, it was actually split almost exactly down the middle. Republicans got about 50% and Democrats got about 49.6. But Democrats ended up with what more of experts refer to as wasted votes. Those are ones that didn't sway the outcome of the election, either because they went to losing candidates in districts that were won by Republicans or because they went to Democratic candidates in districts that that party won by comfortable margins. There are always at least some wasted votes in any election for both parties, but a political map is considered to be more neutral if both parties end up with about the same number.
And what does that tell us about the map this year?
So the efficiency gap in this year's state Senate race ended being about 10% in favor of the Republicans. And that means that that party picked up about 10% or about 2 more seats than they would have on a more politically neutral map. That's not out of line with what we've seen in past election cycles. When my colleagues at NHPR did the same analysis on state Senate races going back to the 1980s, they found that with just a few exceptions, the lines on the map gave Republicans an advantage, winning more seats than they would have with more competitive districts across the board.
So what is the takeaway here?
Basically, redistricting alone didn't determine the outcome of the election, but it's one of many factors that could have made a difference.
And some people are trying to change the redistricting process altogether in New Hampshire. Is that correct?
Right. So Democrats in particular have tried to drum up support for taking the legislature out of the redistricting business entirely. Some other states have already done this, and instead, they put an independent commission in charge of redistricting. Two proposals to create that kind of group in New Hampshire failed last year, mostly along party lines. There's another one that's going to be up again this year before the legislature. Last year, when the bill came up for a vote in the state Senate, all of the votes to move forward with creating that independent group came from Democrats, but none of the Republicans wanted to give up that power. And when you look at the outcome this year, it's not hard to understand why.
All right, Casey, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
That's Casey McDermott, and you can find more of Casey's reporting along with more of NHPR's in-depth analysis on the effects of redistricting at the state level at nhpr.org.